Blog Talk Radio.
This is National Detroit from the Motor City, a weekly Blog Talk Radio show with national, international news and commentary and political thoughts featuring blogger Harold Sullivan. And my name is Michael Van Tool. National Detroit is weekly and brought to you by the law offices of Pascal, Tashman, and Walker. Pascal, Tashman, and Walker is a full-service national law firm committed to providing the best possible legal services to meet your specific needs. Here are some of the services provided. You can call for a free, no-obligation consultation. I'm going to go down a list here for you. And if there's something else that you're interested in, Pascal, Tashman, and Walker can help you. Auto truck accidents, workers' compensation, Social Security disability, veterans benefits, medical mistakes, birth injuries, child custody, child support, employment law, business litigation, probate and estate planning, criminal and DUI defense, bankruptcy. Call Pascal, Tashman, and Walker. The number is 248-7750. The great world traveler, Harold Sullivan, is here in the studio this afternoon. Harold, how are you?
Michael, I am doing just fine, blessed. Sorry that I was not able to be with you on last Wednesday. However, I did get an opportunity to get away, spend some quality time with family and friends. My niece, who is an educator, is relocating to Austin, Texas. Ooh. So as a family, we kind of collaborated and got the U-Haul and drove some 1,400 miles to Austin, Texas.
That sounds fun. That sounds fun.
It was fun. You know,
any unpredictable things that happened along the way? Unscripted?
Well, not on the road, but, you know, we did go boating in Austin on Lake Travis, and as we were taking the boat out of the dock area, out of the slip, and heading for the larger part of Lake Travis, getting into the real deal of the boating, there were some young people who were bringing their boat back into the slip, and my cousin Tommy and I, we looked up and we said, "Hey, they're gonna." Before we can get the words "hit us" out, that's exactly what they had done. They had hit us. So we had to take our boat back into the slip to make sure that there were no damages.
Right.
And if there were damages, we were going to make sure they were assessed to the party that was responsible. But there were no
damages. The defendant.
Yeah, yeah. Michael, you could look into their eyes from the distance that we were, from one boat to the other, and you could tell these kids were toasted.
Wow.
But no one was injured, no one was hurt, and we actually had a really great time. Austin's a wonderful city. I used to live in Texas, but I'd never been to Austin before.
What was the weather like?
The weather was hot.
Not our kind of hot. You talking it was real heat.
It was a little bit hotter. I'm talking 103
wow.
degrees,
yeah.
and that heat was intense well into the evening hours. So you're looking at 7, 8 o'clock, you know, you still have 90-degree temperatures.
Now, you know, here it tends to cool off around 4 or 5 in the morning. What about Texas? Does it ever cool off at night?
Yeah, the night, well, we were in air conditioning, of course, so... But when you step out, even if you say, for instance, you're going to step out at night, take the garbage out.
Mm-hmm.
My niece has a dog, you know.
Let the dog out.
Let the dog out, whatever. As soon as you open up that door, you get hit with the heat.
So
even at that late hour in the evening. So, it's pretty hot.
That's one thing I've heard, that's the difference between there is no relief, not even in the shade.
Right.
In the daytime, there is no difference. It's just that the sun's not beaming on you, but the temperature's the same.
If there's any consolation as relates to North Texas, it's a drier heat, like they say about Phoenix.
Mm.
I mean, but it's still hot. And the only way that I can equate some rationale is to understanding what it's like. It's like you're in the kitchen and you open up the oven and the heat just smacks you in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's like.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I remember once I was flew to Puerto Rico and stepped out, you know, sometimes the plane doesn't always get hooked up to the air conditioned connection to the airport.
Yes.
Sometimes you're let out onto the tarmac.
Yes, I've done that before.
So you're sitting for hours in a nice, cool jet, and then you land at one of those Caribbean airports, and they open the door, and that blast of heat, and it's like you're there. You're on the island.
Right.
Wow.
Here we are.
Well, I'm glad you're back safe, man, you know?
And, you know, one of the things, I know we've been talking a lot of political issues and, you know, National Detroit is designed to really take an introspective look on a lot of the things that are happening politically, as we are in this presidential cycle. But in my travels, I was traveling with two other educators, one being my niece, who, of course, is leaving the Detroit area to go to Austin to be a teacher, and my sister-in-law, who is a retired teacher. And
that's who you were sitting in the car with?
Yeah.
They brainwashed you. Look at you. Now you were political before you left. Now you're all about education. They got to you.
Well, you know, but it's
a good
important.
Thing, though, isn't it?
It is. It's a good thing, because what we were talking about is the fact that many of us in the urban communities, when I say us, I'm talking about the parents in the curriculum or in the building of the curriculum for our child's education. It is shameful, some of the things that are taught in the public school system that really go unchecked factually. And I'll expound upon that a little bit later on. But as we were, you know, just talking a little bit earlier, we were saying that, you know, you don't sign a contract without looking at the language, reading the language. You don't rent an apartment without reading the contract before signing it. You don't buy a house or go into a mortgage without first understanding all of the fine points of that mortgage document before you put your John Hancock down. But in many instances, what we do is, on that first day of school, you know, we're very happy. We've gone out, done the back-to-school shopping. We've purchased the school supplies. In some cases, you know, the kids have the shots and what have you. And then we send them to school. And then if you were to ask a parent, well, what's the student's curriculum going to be for this particular school year? We don't know. So in keeping with being better apprised of what it is that we're immersing ourselves and our children into, in talking with my niece and my sister-in-law and other educators as well, we discussed the fact that particularly in our community, and when I say our community, I'm talking about us as African-Americans, woefully, and probably because we just never have given it much thought, there are avenues open for parents to actually have an involvement with the building of curriculum in the school system where your child is going.
Harold, did you all talk about what omitted, too, is in there that may be factually incorrect?
Mm-hmm.
But what about the things that are omitted from their education, too, the stuff that's just not even there?
Well, in some textbooks, Michael, when we were coming up, we did read about slavery.
Mm-hmm.
But there are numerous school districts now that are striking the word slavery out.
But what are they calling it?
They're calling it forced servitude or indentured servitude. But the referencing to slavery is being slowly worked out of the curriculum. The language is such that it neutralizes many of the bad things that have happened to people down through the years. Not only African-Americans, but Native Americans and, you know, some of the other indigenous groups that have come here to the United States and have resultingly have had many of their you know, some of the contributions that they've made.
Mm-hmm.
I said I wanted to make reference to something a little bit earlier. And one of the things I've discovered here as of late, you know, in the spring we celebrate a holiday. It's our first summer holiday, actually, which is Memorial Day,
mm-hmm.
which is the forerunner to the summer holiday season. I discovered that it was in 1867 that the slaves in South Carolina saw fit proper burials for many of the Union soldiers that had been killed
mm-hmm.
in battle. And as a result of that, that opportunity for them to, you know, give reverence to their contributions in the war, slaves began to observe that particular day as a day of memorial. However, if you go into the textbooks and you look at who was credited with the first official Memorial Day, which, by the way, was celebrated May the 30th, and they're calling this the first initial, first Memorial Day, May 30th, 1868. The credit is given to Civil War Commander-in-Chief John A. Logan. It says here that he's responsible for declaring the first official Memorial Day in 1868. However, the slaves in South Carolina 1 year earlier had already been given the opportunity to establish a memorial service for fallen soldiers in the Civil War. So a lot of times we're going into the schools and our kids are picking up the textbooks, and you're going to read about Mr. Logan, John A. Logan, and he's being given the credit for starting Memorial Day, but he's not the one. Okay? So, again, and building and working with curriculum in the school systems is nothing really new, because sometimes educators have kind of scoffed at parent involvement in building curriculum. Now, as you know, we have the STEM program. That acronym stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
So what is happening now, STEM is being installed in many school districts locally here in the Detroit area and throughout the United States, giving our children an opportunity to have a better grasp of these fields of technology and sciences and what have you, mathematics. How many times have you heard someone say, you know, I never liked math in school. Engineering, that's not something that I'm interested in. But if a child is given an opportunity to understand how these basic functions, these rudimentary functions are instilled into everyday life, it gives them an idea that, this is something I think I might like to do, or I might like to involve myself in further. Or I might even like to go and tell my mom and my dad that, yeah, I'd like to involve myself in a summer program, even after, you know, their regular school semester has ended.
Mm-hmm.
But going even further still, if a parent goes into the school system and shares with the teachers, shares with the administrators, and with the principals that, you know what, I'd like to take greater participation in what it is my child is learning here in this school. After all, they're spending about a third of their day. And, of course, when they come home from school, I ask, how was your day at school? It was good, Mom.
Yes, that's typically how kids answer about their school day or anything where they go without you.
Yeah.
It was good, fine, okay. One-word answer.
Mm-hmm.
One word.
What did you learn today?
Well, not much.
Yeah, we did some math. You know, we had some spelling words. Okay. But from a curriculum standpoint, we can actually, at a very young age, help to enrich the young person's mind, and to they'll know that even though their parents were part of the building of curriculum, I'm pretty sure the parents are going to talk to their child and find out some of the things it is that they're learning. Do you think you're going to go into the school system, Michael, and learn about the Nat Turner slave rebellion?
I don't think so. And the other thing that I'm concerned about, not only just avoiding those difficult topics, some you know, some people don't want to deal with those because they may feel guilty, you know, like because some they have some thought on their own, prejudicial thoughts and things like that, racist thoughts and all that stuff. But what about those organizations that want to influence our agenda? That is also problematic.
It is.
Because, you know, what are their objectives of why are they putting certain things on the agenda to cover in schools, to cover someone's political thought? Is it to cover someone's ideological thought or religious thought that may be conflict with my ideas?
Absolutely.
You know, and if I don't take an interest in my kids' education, someone or some group or some other religion is going to influence it and hijack my kids' education.
Well, Michael, as you know, as you well know, in my other life, I work in education myself, in the education arena, albeit as a substitute teacher. But substitutes have a function. And one of the things that I'm finding when I go into these schools and the various districts in which I sub, I find that young children, and I generally work within the 12th grade segment of students. I find that I have a better relationship there as opposed to like the elementary education or what have you. But in that 9th to 12th category of students, I relate better to them. They're older, a little bit more understanding about what it is that they're doing in the school system and what their future educational endeavors are going to be if they want to go past the high school graduation into college or even into graduate school. You get an opportunity to share many of your educational paths with these young people. And I find that they're very appreciative. In many instances, I go into school systems, and the school systems sometimes are located within the body of a majority African-American community. Unfortunately, you don't see many males. You see virtually no black males either teaching or subbing. And when you do find yourself in that situation, it's not unusual for a kid to come up to you and say, "Hey, Mr. Solomon, I'm glad you are here. We don't see many of you in this setting."
Wow.
Okay? So we have to be mindful of not only what it is the child is learning in that educational environment, but who is doing the teaching and what the subject matter is that they're teaching. What is the subject matter? So, again, like I was saying to you about many of the academic books, the textbooks, inching out or phasing out the reference to slavery and using the terms forced servitude, you know. So what if a child who is going into school and he reads this, and it may just go over their head. They may not know exactly what it means.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Is that individual going to come home from school and say, "Hey, Mom, they taught this in school today," or "My textbook says this"? Another thing, too, from curriculum building standpoint, we need to build our curriculum in such a way that the parents are able to aid the student in the home.
Yeah.
If you have a child, do you realize that many of your children do not even bring books home from school?
No, they don't. I know that's something new. They don't bring them home. A lot of the school systems don't even have enough books to give out.
Let me tell you. Okay, my son young Prince Harold was enrolled in special education program.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is he was born with cerebral palsy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is such a thing, and parents, I want you to take heed of this. Write this information down. There's such a thing that's known as an IEP. In the realm of education, we tend to toss around a lot of language and alphabet soup acronyms. But you need to know what it is that is being prescribed for your son or for your daughter. With my son being into a being introduced to something called a POHI program, P-O-H-I. The acronym stood for physically or otherwise handicapped impaired. Okay, and there's a rationale and a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that he was in a wheelchair, he did not have the ability to be ambulatory or have that movement.
Mm-hmm.
He was placed into an environment where he was working with other students who had similar disabilities, or in some cases, some educational or intelligence situations. Okay, so when you start talking about POHI, physically or otherwise handicapped impaired, that I comes in. But in other situations, the I could be there's another designation for EI, emotionally impaired students.
Mm-hmm.
So as a substitute, I have to be aware of what kind of classroom setting that I'm stepping into. And if it's an EI situation, I know that it could be a tough day.
Mm-hmm.
Because students there in that capacity are challenged. Well, praise God, with our son, because of his tenacity, his natural curiosity, he eventually gravitated out of the special education designation,
mm-hmm.
and he was then put into what they call a mainstream educational program.
Okay.
However, his mother and I continue to want to monitor his progress, because a lot of times, Michael, children go to school and they're warehoused. Okay? So when I go into what is called an IEP, okay, which is a individual educational plan.
Okay.
Okay. That IEP details what our thoughts are, my wife and I, what we want to see our son take away during a particular time frame.
Okay.
Might be over a 3-month time frame.
Like or a semester.
Or a semester time frame.
Okay.
And these are milestones that we want to come back to at some later point when we reconvene to discuss, well, hey, how did Harold or how did your son or daughter do during this particular time frame?
Mm-hmm.
Did they meet this particular milestone? Did they were they able to, you know, do the homework?
Right.
Were they able to understand
or complete the
program
or whatever? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Complete the assignments.
Yeah.
What were their interactions like other students?
Mm-hmm.
You know. So as that progressed, and he was able to eventually become mainstreamed, the only thing that really held him back, and that really was holding him back, the fact that he had a wheelchair. If anything, he was scolded numerous times for driving too fast in the hallway. So, yeah, he was cited for that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, other than that, I mean, he was able to handle the rigors of the program.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, there were other children who had the same parental involvement. They fared very well, Michael.
Mm.
They fared very well. However, yet there were other students that were in that similar capacity in terms of the POHI designation or the EI designation that were socially promoted.
Now, do all schools have these type of parental plans, or is this something that you have to ask for?
Yes. When we were introduced into that new system, we asked for educators that would be able to help us to work Harold into that system.
Mm-hmm.
And in so doing, we met some people that were very nice and very kind
mm-hmm.
with respect to, you know, sharing with us how these milestones can best be reached
mm-hmm.
with additional help from the home. I think the one thing that I found disappointing, Michael, and you being an African-American man, I'm an African-American man, the thing that I found to be very disturbing to me was the fact that when I went to the IEP with my wife,
mm-hmm.
it was almost like I was an anomaly. Is the father here?
Wow. Wow.
You know?
Yeah, that is.
So and I there was a couple times I had to say, I'm here too.
Yeah.
I'm Harold's father.
Wow.
You know? And so from this standpoint, here we are about to embark upon a new school year. It is vitally important in terms of curriculum building. It may be a little bit late for the 2016-27 school year,
mm-hmm.
but if you have younger students who are going to be matriculating through elementary, middle school, high school, and over the next few years, I would encourage you very, very much to see to it as to how you can work in the realm of building curriculum.
You know, and not only getting involved that way, but getting involved with the parent-teacher groups.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to take part in your school when you're there. That time goes by so fast. I remember when my son was at Bates Academy and how I made sure that I got on with the parent-teacher groups, got involved, went on the field trips, was a chaperone. I remember we went to some events. I helped to do the barbecue when we got to the little farm area. You
mm-hmm.
know, we went to the science center. You got to take part in your child's life. Those years go by so fast.
Yeah,
and then they're in high school, and then they're ready for college. It doesn't last that long, and you've got to take an interest in their day-to-day education. You've got to go through their when they come home with their backpack, sometimes surprise them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are, you know, you're working every day. It's hard to monitor it every day, but some days say, hey, let's go through your backpack. Let's go through everything. Let's take a look.
Yeah.
And go through all the papers and see what's there. Oh, you're going to be surprised. You're going to be surprised at some of the 100% and the A pluses, but you're also going to see some zeros.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see some not complete. You're going to get surprised at what you see, but and then you're going to be surprised at some of the things that they're learning. Just like you said, you're mm-hmm. going to be surprised at what they're discussing. Oh,
right.
You all are talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got to take an interest in it. I really think that's so key. I hope that this program just gets out there. We're gonna put more effort into getting this valuable information out. We're gonna make sure that you, when you're hearing this now, if you're hearing this now, this is proof that we're getting it out there.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, parents, moms, dads, roll up your sleeves, take an active role in your child's education. If you find that they're not bringing books home, you can't appeal to the teachers or to the department heads and say to them, look, I want to be an active participant in little Johnny's work. You can perhaps even request that you are provided with a textbook so that you can. This is me. I don't know about anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, for instance, with math, I used to hate math.
A lot of people hate it.
Now I have a greater appreciation for math. There are rules to math. And once you understand the rules and the formula.
It's a language.
It's a language.
It's another language. But it does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
There is a logical aspect
mm-hmm.
to the answers
mm-hmm.
in math.
Yep. And so when your child comes home and they have these one or two sheets and they say to you, well, hey, this is my homework. I wonder if you can help me with it. Well, all you have are those one or two little sheets, so you don't have access to the rule. or to the function or what the overall concept is of that particular chapter or those three or four pages that they've been assigned. I'm one of those types of individual. I have to have that practical background in order for me to, you know, step in and to be of help or to be of service, you know, to the child. So, you know, we've got to go above and beyond what we normally would do, as opposed to just say, well, hey, my son has great attendance. My daughter, you know, she's doing well in all of her subjects and all of these different kind of things. Let's make sure that our children are not victims of social promotion, you know, because we like to know that our child is performing.
Yes, you want to know.
At least on par.
That's right.
You know, at least on par. But if you know, and there are ways that you can monitor, you know, the lesson plans and what have you, they have varying degrees of computer interaction that parents can tap into. You can see, you know, how many assignments your son or daughter has completed, what the scoring was on there, if there are any assignments that are still out that need to be turned in. So when you go to parent-teacher conference, you can speak intelligently with all of the teachers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you won't have to get a scolding from the teachers.
Yeah,
too,
exactly.
Because they know who participates. They know who goes to the parent-teacher conferences. They know who is helping their kids with the homework and monitoring. The teachers know. The teachers know.
As I close out my portion here, Michael, I do want to say this. If a child has a parent that is involved, take it from me. If your child is on the balancing point, the tipping point, say, for instance, receiving a C+ or a B, because they know that parent.
That parental involvement can be the tipping point.
That's the tipping
point. It can. Wow. Harold, man, that's great. Look at that. Even on your vacation, you were working for National Detroit and came back with this valuable information. You got tag teamed by two educators, but you're an educator yourself anyway.
And I always say that I'm a substitute teacher.
Yeah, well,
I don't prepare lesson plans, but
you know what? To the kids, you're still important. You know, to the kids, I can tell you this: when you step in the room, they would, you know, a lot of the, you know, when we were in school, substitute teacher came. It's like, oh, we still have to. It's going to be a normal day.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
We thought they weren't going to get here,
mm-hmm.
So they're looking at you like, okay. I guess we're gonna have a free day, but then here comes Mr. Sullivan in the door. Well, you know what? It's gonna get your books open. We're gonna do some studying today.
I've got the lesson plan from your teacher.
That's right.
We're gonna do open to it.
Thank you.
That's
right. And thank you. Thank you.
All right, Michael.
This is National Detroit, a weekly blog talk radio show. We're covering a number of topics, and today, of course, it's been focusing mostly on education with Harold Sullivan. My name is Mike Van Soon. Harold, very, very great. I'm glad you brought that back with you from Texas.
Thank you, Michael.
Being on the road. All right. National Detroit Weekly is brought to you by the law offices of Tashman and Walker. And I'm just going to go over a list of services provided. But if you're dealing with something that's not on the list, this is a national full-service law firm. So give them a call. The number is 248-353-7750, 248-353-7750. Auto and truck accidents, workers' compensation, Social Security disability, veterans' benefits, medical mistakes, birth injuries, child custody, child support, employment law, business litigation, probate and estate planning, criminal and DUI defense, and bankruptcy. So call PTW. Are you down with PTW? Pascal, Tashman, and Walker, 248-353-7750. My special thanks to Mike Cohen from Simple Mortgage in Birmingham, the number 248-480-2080. Again, Simple Mortgage, 248-480-2080. Tell them that I told you to call. Senior Care Transportation. When I'm not driving, I call Senior Care Transport to help me. It's not just for senior care. The number is 844 728
7433, Senior Care Transportation. You know, at Ocean Financial Services, we can put you in touch with a number of referrals to companies that can help you, like investment companies, insurance agents, companies like Simple Mortgage, retirement specialists, but you can also apply for a business loan. Another thing is you can also get office space. Let's say you need a desk. All you need is a desk. I can get you a desk for $200 a month, and it comes with everything. It comes with kitchenette, conference room, internet. Everything's covered. Everything is covered. Your desk, the furniture, it's all here. For $200 a month, you can have a desk. And that number is 248-516-8300. 248-516-8300 if you want a desk. If you want an office space, if you want an entire floor, I can get you an entire floor. So call me at Ocean Financial Services, 248-516-8300. Don't forget to vote for Kelly Ann Ramsey for Wayne County Circuit Court on November 8th. You know what? Kelly Ann Ramsey is dedicated to Michigan's children, families, and our future. She's a candidate for judge in the 3rd Judicial Circuit Court. Uphold the law, serve the community, and build a better future in Wayne County and in the state of Michigan. She brings over 20 years of service to the courts as a referee of the 3rd Circuit Court, the Family Division, Juvenile Section, and over 5 years of service as a Wayne County Assistant Prosecutor. She has heard thousands of cases and made hard decisions for the right reasons. And in that time, she's built a record as an efficient jurist dedicated to enforcing the law and earned a reputation as a tireless worker on behalf of the community. She believes that she's truly effective, and our judicial system must look beyond the mere survival of our children. We must recognize that the actions we take today will have an impact far beyond the current generation. Kelly Ann Ramsey for Judge, November 8, 2016. Colony Realty and Columbus Construction for all your realty and construction needs. You know, if you need repair work done, roofing, home remodeling, flooring, tiles, security doors, inside and outside painting, electrical, plumbing, kitchen cabinets, they have over 25 years of experience. And whether it's business repairs or home repairs, call Colony Realty and Columbus Construction. Is one number for both, 247-7231. Again, the number is 313-247-7231. All right, let me talk about the current situation of the presidential race. You know, we've been covering that. But before I do, I just want to let you know that I am on the board of Franklin Wright Settlement, the nonprofit that helps families, the oldest one in Michigan, to try to help them find housing, counseling, food, senior services, early Head Start, you know, nutrition programs. It's Franklin Wright Settlement. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is the annual college tour. And, you know, Franklin Wright Settlement and CEO Monique Marks have been taking the kids on this college tour for years now. And the mission and purpose of the college tour is to expose the students to colleges and universities and to offer students opportunities for personal growth and development. During the tour, the students usually visit at least 10 colleges and universities. You know, I remember back in 2014, they went to Clark Atlanta, Atlanta Metropolitan State College, Georgia Tech, Emory University, Morehouse, Spelman, University of Georgia, Florida Tech, Florida A&M, Kaiser University. And, you know, while on campus, the students were given an opportunity to speak with admission counselors, financial aid officers, and the students at the university. And, you know, and they have fun, too, because on the college tour, the students also visit important places and
And they have fun, too, because in 2014, they went to Universal Studios and the Islands of Adventure and Daytona Beach. So they have fun, but they also learn about attending college. So it puts them on track. It puts them on track. It gives them hope, you know, and that is so critical because that you can't bring back those years. You can't go back and relive those years from graduating from high school and going into college knowing that if you complete college, put yourself in a better position to succeed and not just survive, but you will thrive and succeed with a four-year college degree. There's a much better chance that you can, and you will also increase your level, you know, standard of living and income level with a four-year college degree. Here's the number for Franklin Wright Settlements, a nonprofit, 313-579-1000. All right, let's get to this campaign. Donald Trump had another law and order speech in Milwaukee last night. I guess it was in West Bend. No, it wasn't in Milwaukee. Although that's how he was acting and talking like it, as though he was in Milwaukee, but he wasn't. He was an hour away. Looks like what, West Bend, Wisconsin? He was an hour away. If he wanted to talk to African-American residents or people in Milwaukee, then he should have went to Milwaukee, and he should talk to black organizations like the NAACP. But anyway, he had another law and order speech. The only thing – I watched the speech. The only thing he said is that they needed more police. I mean, that was his answer. And we know that that's not the answer. We can't turn our cities – and we can't turn this country into a police state. That's going back. That's going backwards. Been there, done it. That's going backwards. We've got to, you know, offer real solutions. His solution was we should have more police. You know, anytime Donald Trump speaks, there's no he will spend 20 if he's speaking for an hour, he will spend 55 minutes talking about what other people have failed to do or what he believes they failed to do, and he'll spend 5 minutes talking about what he'd be able to do, if that. I just didn't see any substance. And then you would think that if whenever he has – like last night, I thought he was trying to get back on track with that speech in Wisconsin, but, you know – 5-6 hours later, he's announcing a campaign shakeup. So his message was lost. Whatever message it was, and I think it was a failed message at the speech in Wisconsin. I think that was a failed message. His economic speech in Detroit was a failed speech. There was nothing in that. This law and order speech was also failed. The speech that he did the other day talking about foreign policy, a lot of the policies that Donald Trump is suggesting are things that President Obama is already doing. So there's not much new. There's not much new. So there's not much substance. But anyway, so he hired a new campaign team. The fired or ousted Roger Ailes from Fox, who's under fire for sexual harassment and was removed from running Fox News Channel. Roger Ailes now has been hired to be the debate prep for Donald Trump. So now Donald Trump has hired, as far as the reports are, if they're correct, he's hired Roger Ailes as the debate preparer for Donald Trump for the debates coming up, which I tell you, I'm going to get my popcorn and I'm going to get my Coca-Cola and I'm going to sit in the front seat of my 55-inch screen and watch this exciting debate, the first debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. I think it's going to be massive. I think you'd be able to probably sell tickets. It's going to be like fight night. I think it's going to be like those old Ali fights in the past, you know, the Thriller in Manila. This is going to be something. But Roger Ailes is supposed to be helping Donald Trump prepare for this. I know Saturday Night Live is going to have a field day over this, over these debates. I love watching Saturday Night Live, especially the first 10 minutes when they usually do the political stuff. But Saturday Night Live is going to live off of the Clinton-Trump debates for months. This is going to be historic, let me tell you. I can't wait for these debates. I just think, you know, Donald Trump is no speaker. He's no debater. It's just going to be a slaughter, the Thriller in Manila. That's what I'm calling it. But Steve Bannon is now the CEO, chief executive officer of the campaign. He's a right-wing media guy. I would say like one of the worst attack artists out here. He's bad news. From Breitbart News. This is not somebody you would want to be friends with. I've heard of Breitbart News. They are one of those slash and burn, say whatever, nothing's off limit for Breitbart News and Steve Bannon. This is not a good thing. This just means that Donald Trump is going in the tank. He's going gutter between now. I mean, you thought it was bad now. But you know what? I look towards the Clintons to be able to defend themselves, even go on the attack in some cases against Steve Bannon and Donald Trump. Paul Manafort is still chairman, but he's been demoted. And Kellyanne Conway is the new campaign manager. So really, it's Steve Bannon. I don't know how much Kellyanne is going to be involved. Paul Manafort. Steve Bannon is running this thing now. And this just means that it's going to get vicious. There's going to be more lies, more viciousness. And I just hope that, you know, there's going to be an October surprise. I don't know when it's coming, but I hope it's something about Trump backing out. I think more Republicans are going to back out. The Trump campaign is a train wreck, and I believe that there will be a landslide for Hillary Clinton on November. I think when you go as negative as I believe Steve Bannon is going to go, I think many more Republicans will jump off the Titanic. They already know it's already hit, you know. the Trump ship has already hit the iceberg. Lifeboats have already been lowered, and there are a few people still up there on the boat singing as though they have a lot of time. People like Paul Ryan and Rudy Giuliani and others and other Republican politicians that know they need to get off if they want to save their careers, jump off now, get in a lifeboat, get off Titanic, and it's a shipwreck waiting to happen. I don't like the fired Corey Lewandowski either. He's always very angry whenever he's being interviewed, very defensive, and I'm so tired of these Trump spokesmen and women like Kellyanne Conway, who remind me of Baghdad Bob. You remember when we were going into Baghdad the first time? When we took out Saddam, and as the American troops were getting closer, 200 miles out, 100 miles out, 50 miles out, and Baghdad Bob was the spokesperson for Saddam Hussein, kept saying that we're not worried about the Americans, they're not going to get here. President our leader Saddam is in total control. It's not going to happen. Until the day that the Americans arrived in Baghdad, and Baghdad Bob was no longer, and Saddam was hunted down, and the Americans moved into Baghdad. But the Donald Trump, I call them Trumpsters, the spokespeople for Donald Trump, I'm so tired. It's like they all go to Trump Tower, drink the Kool-Aid, and then they come out dumber than ever. They will defend Donald Trump no matter how crazy, stupid, ignorant, or no matter what lies he's told, they defend him to the bitter end. And I get so tired. It's Ted Koppel was right. People like Bill O'Reilly and people like these right-wing Republican talking heads, they have dumbed this country down. We've gotten Go look up Ted Koppel and Bill O'Reilly. Ted Koppel was right. The news has been dumbed down. I can't believe some of the conversations that are occurring on television now, on these interview programs, on cable networks, I can't believe some of the hypocrisy, some of the lies, some of the explanations. I never thought that I would see this in my life. I never thought I could see people revert back to a primitive type of communication, a primitive emotional feelings. And I thought people were more intelligent in this country. I thought people would have to take a bigger stand, have more principles than they do. I just never thought I would see this. And it gives me a headache. Sometimes I sit there and watch CNN and Fox and MSNBC with my son, and even he's 14 in high school, and he has to smile and laugh sometimes at how ignorant the Trumpmen are, that they can't even answer a simple question because they have to find a way to put a spin on it so that it won't make Donald Trump look bad. You know, I wish, it's unfortunate that there's a group in this country, an electorate that are existing on a basic gutter level, and they're not intelligent, and they're not smart, and they're racist, and Donald Trump is tapping into that ignorance and stupidity and lack of education, and they're not wise or smart, they're fools. He's tapped into a group of fools in this country that believe that if they follow somebody like Trump, that somehow going to be able to change them. And that's just not going to happen. They have to change for themselves. Those poor fools that believe that Donald Trump, billionaire, is here to help save them from their poverty and their ignorance and their stupidity and their lack of education and their racism. That's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. I still believe that the Trump campaign is a train wreck waiting to happen, and I do not believe that the Trump campaign, I really don't think it's going to survive in its current form until November 8th. I believe it will be a landslide. I believe that there will be a number of lies and attacks, vicious attacks made on Hillary Clinton. I believe that she and the Hillary Clinton team, including Bill Clinton and the Democrats, are smarter, and they know what's coming, and they know how to protect themselves. Hillary Clinton has already showed some wisdom and intelligence in backing off, and even the president has even backed off on some of the responses and comments. You just can't let Donald Trump get away with saying whatever he wants to say. You do have to put a stop to it and respond, but you don't have to continually go in the gutter with him every day. He tends to hang himself
you know, he does the most damage that he's done, he's doing to himself. That is a very effective strategy. You just let him, because he lives and dies by sound bites. He lives and dies by the roar of, you know, the mob mentality. You know, I think a lot of his decisions in the past have been made because of the roar of an audience, the applause, you know, the shouting in the audience. He believes he's so ignorant that he believes that the mob crowd, the mob mentality, helps him to make decisions and gives him his momentum. He believes that that is an indication of his success and the direction of his campaign. The mobs that attend his events, those are mobs. Those are lynch mobs. I believe that those people that attend the Donald Trump rallies, some of them don't even realize that that's what they're participating in, the modern-day lynch mob. These are the same lynch mob mentality that you find going out chasing down black people in 1939 and 1940 and 1950, looking to hang somebody, kill somebody, burn somebody, shoot somebody. Look at the crowds that were chanting, "Lock her up, lock her up." Very, very disrespectful. I just thought that was one of the worst chants, the worst chanting that was going on this summer. And there are a lot of chants that can't even be repeated. There was a lot more being said about groups of people. Very disrespectful. And those crowds that I told you, I won't feel and don't feel safe going to a Donald Trump rally. I don't think you understand until you go there how vicious it is, how very vicious it is. Unfortunate. You're listening to National Detroit, a weekly blog talk radio show with national, international news and political commentary featuring blogger Harold Sullivan. My name is Michael Van Sewell. I really appreciate you being here with us. National Detroit Weekly is brought to you by the law offices of Paschal, Tashman, and Walker. Attorney Cliff Paschal is the lead attorney at Paschal, Tashman, and Walker, and they're known as the pastor's choice. Paschal, Tashman, and Walker is the pastor's choice, specializing in past churches and congregations with excellence in legal representation. They are intimately aware of your needs and stand by ready to serve you. The number for Paschal, Tashman, and Walker is 248-353-50. Thank you so much again. My name is Michael Van Sewell. Thank you so much for joining us here on National Detroit Weekly. Listen to all of our programs. We have back programs that you can listen to. Very topical. Again, my thanks to Colony Realty and Columbus Construction, 313-248-7231. Ocean Financial Services, you need office space, 248-516-8300. Simple Mortgage, 248-480-2080. Thank you again. Senior Care Transportation, 248-356-6898. Okay? Thank you. This is National Detroit Weekly. My name is Michael Van Sewell, and I appreciate you sitting here with me. Catch up on some of our other shows. Listen to it on your way to work, on your way back home in the evening. Listen to it overnight. You can listen to it anytime. Just go to my Facebook page, Michael Van Sewell, MichaelVanTull. I love you all. Thank you. God bless you.